looking for a sign. I'm looking for the treason that I knew in 65. Beware, the South is yours. Oh, 1984. Come see, remember me.
Stayed out all night moving round. You said it would last, but I guess we grow.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Steve Clemens, who is a Washington editor-at-large for The Atlantic and editor-in-chief of Atlantic Live. He's also a senior fellow and founder of the American Security Program at the New America Foundation and previously served as executive director of the Japan-America Society of Southern California and co-founded with Chalmers Johnson the Japan Policy Research Institute. Welcome to Background Briefing, Steve Clemens.
My pleasure, Ian.
And Steve, I wanted to talk to you about the recent close vote on stopping the NSA from spying on Americans and the apparent gulf between the public and the political establishment on the government's intrusion into our civil liberties, and also, of course, touch on the fate of Edward Snowden and whether the White House is using the cancellation of Obama's September visit to Russia as leverage in getting Putin to hand over Snowden. So there's the menu for today, Steve.
It's a nice plate of things. I mean, I really think that the vote that was held on the funding of the NSA after this and how close it came to winning is a really interesting barometer reading of how concerned many Americans are that so much of their private data is being amassed by a government agency. And Justin Amasha, a Republican, someone I happen to know and admire, 33-year-old Republican from Dearborn, Michigan, and has been active really in the Republican Party and knocking back some of the, you know, anti-Muslim and racist elements of some of the Republican Party. I admire him on many of those fronts. Nonetheless, almost got away with this extraordinary amendment that Nancy Pelosi and John Boehner both had to get out and personally whip votes to try and stop him and what he was trying to propose. So with almost no debate and, you know, just the knee-jerk reactions of many people are very concerned about this, about what the NSA is doing. And while many people are saying, hey, you know, he lost and that shows where the, you know, will of the public is, I don't see that at all. I see it as rather a strengthening of the position that many people want to see the powers of the National Security Agency curtailed.
And it would seem that the Edward Snowden story has been sidetracked largely by his personal saga, traveling around the world and being a fugitive, and all that's taken place in Moscow, etc., has taken all of our eyes off the ball. And that is, of course, what he originally revealed. And the president himself did call for this debate. And obviously...
Well, I guess I have mixed feelings about it. I may see it a little differently than you do. When Snowden actually revealed himself in that extraordinary 15-minute exchange with Glenn Greenwald, when they went back and forth, I was actually mentioned in it because there were mention of some Twitter comments. I didn't know Snowden. I hadn't known he was going to reveal himself, but there was a back and forth set of comments on my Twitter that got an awful lot of attention at that time. And I did think at that time that people would get lost and distracted by the story of this young man who is a sort of Daniel Ellsberg of today in a way, rather than the broader, deeper issues of how much of our, you know, our liberties have been rolled back by the expansion of official secrecy and the expansion of powers of the presidency. And while the president called for the debate, you know, today there was a powerful piece by Mark Udall and Ron Wyden, two senators who've been active in this, basically saying, you know, we need to have this debate. We need to keep the NSA from gathering all of this data. So I sort of see the debate going on, but there has been a benefit of the Snowden affair. You know, you're in the media. You know how fickle the media is in covering things. Snowden's ongoing purgatory right now, sitting over in a Russian airport, has kept this story alive a lot longer than I thought it would be. And I do think that it's contributing to the notion that there needs to be a debate. And as time has gone on, more and more Americans have seen him not as a traitor, but more as a whistleblower. I have mixed views about Snowden. I think that he went over the line and some of the things that he revealed, but I think that he is, you know, very important and you know, counts in the book where I would put Daniel Ellsberg, which is a hero on revealing the NSA element of their tracking, you know, American citizens' data in communications. So I think that his being out there is part distraction, but it's also part continuing the story in the news, because believe me, the White House would really like this story to go away so they can get on to other things, and they don't want to have this debate.
Again, I'm speaking with Steve Clemens, who is the Washington Editor-at-Large for The Atlantic and Editor-in-Chief of Atlantic Live. He's also Senior Fellow and Founder of the American Security Program of the New America Foundation, and previously served as Executive Director of the Japan-America Society of Southern California, and co-founded with Chalmers Johnson the Japan Policy Research Institute. Well, initially, though, of course...
You say all that so well. Something mouthful.
You know, when it first came out, the story first came out, of course, Booz Allen Hamilton, which is the contractor that Snowden worked for, it's in turn owned by the Carlyle Group, which is the ultimate in insiders. And the whole idea of 70% of our intelligence budget being privatized with these opaque government, these opaque corporate entities, and the enormous amount of money that's going into is, I'm beginning to see a sort of repeat of the Cold War in the sense that during the Cold War, deterrence itself became kind of a racket because there was never enough deterrence, and therefore the military-industrial complex got a blank check, more submarines, more planes, more missiles, etc., and it just went on and on and on. And it seems to me that in the information age, we have a similar conundrum where there's not enough information. There can never be enough information, particularly precise information of the kind that the NSA is looking for. So do you think that we have created a monster here?
Well, I've been arguing for many years that we have been, that the expansion of secrecy and the expansion of a national security state in response to what was defined, I think, wrongly as a global war on terrorism. I said, this is the threat that we'll keep giving because there's no end to it. Terrorism is a tactic, but people will always be able to point to something. And this was perfectly tuned into what we used to call the missile gap, or used to call, you know, the threat inflation from the Soviet Union at the time, where the Soviets were far less capable, their economy far less robust, that the vector for their nation was much less concerning, you know, if you had a substantive read. And so we were overanalyzing that threat and then trying to meet it in the United States. Now you can look back and see how, you know, what the gap in that was. And so I worried a lot that, you know, a kind of fear-mongering approach that I think that the Bush and Cheney administration took, which I think the Obama administration in many ways has maintained, unfortunately, has, you know, created a situation where anything that the government wanted to do is justified. Now, I think there are people in government like Chuck Hagel and others who really don't see the world that way and would like to see gravity come back into the national intelligence and the national military space. But we've been off on a binge where we have been doing this. And on the privatization side, you know, I don't know if that's Cold War-like, but I do have a lot of concerns that the notion that you can take so many of the roles and functions that were in the private military space or the intelligence space, privatize them, and you think you're getting more efficiencies. We've just seen basically, you know, you're familiar with Japan. In Japan in the old days, they would, you know, have something called descent from heaven, so that amakudari, that after you worked in the Japanese government for most of your life, you would go off to a position in private industry that was made available to you as a cushy job. We've created an amakudari or a descent for heaven for generals that basically retire from the military and they go into extremely well-paid private contracting positions overseeing many individuals who have retired from or who have left the military as well, who are playing the same role they were in the military but at twice or three times the pay. And so this hasn't created efficiencies. It's actually not necessarily enhanced, you know, America's military strength, reach, or capabilities, but it's made it all an awful lot more expensive, and it's given us a way to reward, I think, you know, too nicely in my book, many people who have retired from the military service. That's why we've contracted so much into the private side. That is not Cold War. Like, that's just structural corruption.
Right. Well, obviously, there's no shortage in Washington of trading public service for private gain. But surely the worst part of it is that if you have generals in office, either in the Pentagon or at the head of the NSA, which always has a four-star
right.
as its head, and McConnell was the four-star at the head of NSA for some time, and now he's at Booz Allen Hamilton, the contractor that Snowden worked for. So it was while McConnell was there at NSA that I think you have the worst possibility of corruption, because, you know, you could be feathering your nest for the next job. And there have been a couple of whistleblowers, Thomas Drake and William Binney, who've talked about massive programs that were just huge boondoggles, up to $8 billion being wasted on one called Trailblazer. And Hayden, of course, went from the NSA to head up the CIA, and I'm sure he's got plenty of office in the private sector. So isn't that the problem? It's not so much where they go afterwards. It's what they do when they're in office, in not being watchdogs for the public interest, but maybe looking ahead for a new corporate sponsor.
Well, I agree with everything you said, but you know, I have this view of government that sometimes gets me into trouble with my progressive friends. I know Mike McConnell, I know Mike Hayden, I know other that have been substantially significant in the intelligence world. And they have built a labyrinth of institutions with enormous capacities. And, you know, while you can look for the $8 billion failures, you can also see they've amassed an incredible machine that is Orwellian and that has unbelievable capacity to run all sorts of electronic communications through it. We're debating one element of that in terms of what they can do domestically in the United States, but they've built something that really works. And to a certain degree, it's not entirely their job to be warm and fuzzy defenders of democracy. That job belongs to a smarter president, and it belongs to a judicial branch of government that supposedly through FISA courts was supposed to manage this, but largely became a rubber stamp. And it belongs to Congress, where, you know, you've got people like Ron Wyden and Mark Udall who've been, you know, whistling in the dark, you know, very much alone, where members of Congress, and I think, have been derelict in their duty in applying oversight. I have a view of government as one that is a ferocious struggle among branches of government. And the fact is the legislative branch and the judicial branch have poorly served Americans, and they've not been doing their role to curtail this power. So the NSA will never, ever roll back its own capabilities. And people need to understand this, that while I'm concerned about the NSA and I'm very publicly out there in terms of what they've done and I'm opposed to it, nonetheless, I don't view it as their role to do this. They've kind of, you know, gone on this boondoggle and they've been doing this. We need the other branches of government to come in with appropriate oversight, but there is no oversight. Dana Priest, the Pulitzer Prize winning writer from the Washington Post, who did such a great job in revealing the secret prisons in Europe and won the Pulitzer Prize, that is also someone who in the last couple of years has done some of the best articles out there on what she calls the intelligence industrial complex that has become super large, sprawling, and beyond anyone's ability to really look at. We have a problem in this country, and you know, the NSA is never going to roll back its own power. We have to. You've got to get other people engaged,
sure,
and legislators have to get off their rear ends and actually begin doing what Justin Amash did. That's why what he did was so incredibly impressive. It didn't win, but it's very close to winning. And I think that we're going to potentially get the system back into at least some rollback of these authorities that the NSA has taken.
And indeed, Dana Priest, who you just mentioned, co-authored with Bill Arkin the Top Secret America series for the Washington Post, which was an enormous breakthrough. Remember, back in 2010.
Yeah, that caused a lot of grief in the intelligence community because it was so revealing and so accurate.
Right, and I actually had Bill Arkin out here at the UCLA Hammer last week talking about it, and my head's still reeling from what he told us.
Yeah, I mean, the articles are a bit, you know, a couple years old, but I would go back.
Exactly.
Interested in this subject and take a look, because it was a nice precursor to everything that we're seeing revealed today,
exactly,
in real time by Snowden and others.
Well, so Steve, you were just saying a minute ago that you're out of step with your progressive friends. I'm certainly about to get out of step with my progressive friends by suggesting that the problem with progressives is that they can't have two thoughts in their head at the same time, and it's quite possible that Snowden is both a hero and a traitor. And, you know, if you watch MSNBC too much, you get kind of tribal about your politics, or equally so on the right if you watch Fox all the time. And I think there's obviously a lot of nuance here. What's your sense then of what's going on in Moscow? Is Obama and the White House using his September, or the threat of canceling his September trip to Moscow that Putin is very invested in, to get Snowden? Is that going on?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the ultimate outcome between Putin and Obama will be. Putin didn't go to Chicago for the summit that Obama had invited him for. So these things go back and forth. And ultimately, we can make more of that than we should, because Russia and the United States are struggling over Syria, over Iran, over a lot of other issues. And Snowden was a real gift to Putin because, and I said at the time when people said, you know, is he going to leave? I really doubted he was going to leave the airport. And I just said, look, we have to be careful of, you know, this discussion from WikiLeaks about the flight of liberty. I said, I don't quite buy it. Putin gets a lot of juice out of this. And he pretends to be annoyed, but it actually is a way for him to just play with the United States and play with the president a bit. And so I look at this as a kind of surface, you know, a surface issue that is less deep. But it is uncomfortable for me to have Edward Snowden seeking refuge from illiberal regimes. And I think that is complicated. And I think that, you know, Snowden revealed something that was so important and vital. And I think he was a real hero for it. And I believe he was a whistleblower until he went over the line and began sharing other dimensions of what the NSA can do. Because certainly China, Russia, and other governments, Israel, Iran, Great Britain, France, all have significant intelligence establishments that are prying and you know, basically tapping into the infrastructure of the global, you know, communication system. And this is known, it's been out there, but the revelations that Snowden brought, I thought, went beyond the line of public interest of what we as Americans needed to know and should have known. And that's where I think a lot of my friends have, and I've been saying this on MSNBC quite a lot, but, you know, a lot of my progressive friends have been uncomfortable with, you know, my comments on it. So, but he is a hero on the NSA side, and I do think he ventures into the non-hero side. You might want to call it traitor. Traitor sounds so harsh, but I think that he undermined the interests of the country significantly on these other fronts. And he's now, you know, I don't know where it's going to go in Russia, but when you read the Russian press and you hear what's going on, it sort of seems he's becoming a bit of a hero over there in the Russian press. It'll be interesting to see if Putin ignores that level of fascination in the Russian media and the Russian public for Snowden and then sends him abroad, because Putin may take a political hit for that at home.
Well, Steve Clements, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure, Ian. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Steve Clements, who is the Washington Editor-at-Large for The Atlantic and Editor-in-Chief of Atlantic Live. He's also a senior fellow and founder of the American Security Program at the New America Foundation, and previously served as Executive Director of the Japan-American Society of Southern California, and co-founded with Chalmers Johnson the Japan Policy Research Institute. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with one of the authors of the new Associated Press report that has 4 out of 5 adults in America struggling with joblessness and near poverty.